Hello, everyone, and welcome to a fabulous new episode of your favourite colour and decorating podcast, Let's Colour. I'm Marianne Shillingford.
And I'm Steph King. And thank you for tuning in again for, sadly, what will be the last episode in this second series. But never fear, we will be back before you know it. And of course, we are going to make this episode an absolute banger.
Of course we are. We wouldn't have it any other way, would we, Steph?
Absolutely not, no. In today's episode, we are exploring the great outdoors. Well, when I say exploring, of course, what I mean is that Marianne and myself will be chatting about all things exterior DIY and decorating from the comfort of our indoor DIY podcasting studios with a cup of tea.
That's right, Steph. Starting today with our colour lookbook segment, we'll be discussing all aspects of the outdoors, from how to give your house frontage some much needed curb appeal, through to how to show your beloved garden spaces some much love and TLC too.
And all just in time to start welcoming our loved ones, friends and family back into our outdoor spaces for some much needed, actual human, face-to-face interaction. Fancy that.
Oh, that sounds lovely. And then in our colour know-how segment, we'll be talking to a fabulous guest who can give us even more juicy garden tips and tricks to really bring out the best in our outdoor spaces.
It's journalist and gardening expert Jane Perrone.
And then, of course, it's onto my favourite part of the entire show, where we check into the Dr. Dulux surgery and prescribe some remedies to your decorating dilemmas.
And of course, we couldn't finish up without leaving you with a feel-good colour story, proving to you just how much a bit of colour can really make life better.
Well, that sounds like an excellent show, if I do say so myself. I cannot wait to get on with it, because I definitely need some help in the garden department this week. So, Marianne, hello. What have you been up to in the past couple of weeks? Tell me all about it.
Well, Steph, I've been up on the roof. And you know that the roof where I live, because I live in a factory unit, yeah. And up on the roof, we've got a beautiful photography studio where they do loads and loads of food photography. And Ainsley Harriet's up there sometimes doing his food show.
Ainsley, yeah.
And there's loads of herbs. And every pot is filled with herbs that are leftovers from the shows. And last year, I didn't want to spend any money because I'm a bit mean. Otherwise, I wanted to spend lots of love, but no money. But all of these herbs, they survived and they're amazing and they're just starting to get going because there's a bit of heat. I've fed them all. I've trimmed them all. I've got rid of a few that weren't quite performing to my high standards.
No, of course.
But it's all ready to go. And I just honestly can't wait. There's nothing that makes me happier than being outside in the garden, and the roof garden is just gorgeous at this time of year.
Yeah. And it's such a nice way to populate a bit of a green space with herbs that are left over from, because, you know, maybe we all don't do it, but quite often if I want some basil for, you know, a nice pastoral or something, I always buy the pot because it just seems a bit of a waste to buy just the leaves, because, you know, you're not going to get much use out of those otherwise. So why not plant them up and enjoy them for the whole season?
And if you tear them up, so if you've got one of those big pots, you tear it up, you can make loads and loads of plants. Mm. And the basil changes, the flavour changes. It gets more intense when you have it outside. So you have the stuff that you buy in the supermarket, it tastes one way.
Yeah.
You leave it out in the summer, it tastes delicious. Anyway, Steph, enough of my herbs. I want to know what you've been doing, because I know you've got some exciting news to share with us.
Oh, well, yeah, I do actually. So yes, I do have some exciting news. So last time we spoke on the podcast, I was complaining that we hadn't found anywhere to live, and that was not necessarily just because we couldn't agree as a couple, because I'm sure that happens to everybody, not just myself. But yeah, there was just a distinct lack of places for us to go and see. So actually, yes, we have found a place to purchase, which is very, very exciting. And in the previous series of the podcast, I distinctly remember saying to you about some of the trends that we were talking about. There were three different trends, and one of them was called cottagecore. And I remember saying to you, oh, it's just really not me. I'm just really not loving the kind of cottagey, chintzy vibes of cottagecore and what it was all about as a trend. But what I happen to have bought, apparently, is a cottage. I have bought a cottage. So
has it got a thatched roof?
Yeah, I've bought a lovely, well, I hope to have bought anyway, we're just going through the motions, but we've bought a cottage with, you know, proper thatch roof and all sorts. So yeah, I feel like I need to go back on my word a little bit here and say I clearly am I'm going to have to be into the cottage core, aren't I? So
definitely cottage core. What makes me laugh, Steph, is that you've got the cottage and with a thatched roof. And you said there's an acre of garden and an orchard. And I live in a factory unit. I mean,
I know. Yeah, I feel like we've done a personality swap somewhere along the line.
I think we definitely have. Maybe you should do a house swap. Yeah, maybe later on when you get tucked in, I'll go and do your orchard and plant some herbs up for you in your garden.
You might have to be honest, Marianne. I think it's all going to be lost on me when I arrive there. Yeah. So I don't know quite what's come over me, but you know, who knows? But yeah, watch this space. I might be back on the next series of the podcast raving about Laura Ashley curtains all of a sudden from the 80s.
I bet you're going to get some chickens, aren't you? You will get some chickens.
I'd really love some chickens, actually. I really would. Oh, what's wrong with me? I need to get out. I need to go and get a life. I think. Oh dear, lockdown has done this to me, I think. Never mind. Dear. On that cottagecore bombshell, I hope you agree. Shall we get started on today's show?
Absolutely.
So, for those of you new to the podcast, this is the bit of the show where we take a good look at a colour or a theme in decorating that everyone is talking about at the moment. And in this episode, we are really looking forward to spending more time in the great outdoors. Hurrah!
Yeah. And with the sunshine on the way and the novelty of spending more time with our dearly missed friends and family in the garden or chatting with neighbours across the front garden fence, we thought we'd make today's final episode an outdoors special.
Absolutely. It only seems right that we make it an outdoor special, mm-hmm. doesn't it? So let's crack on. So we have actually talked quite a lot in the previous series and the previous episodes about how different our spaces have become to us over the last year, particularly where we have been, you know, locked within our walls, and how much we perhaps had taken for granted some of our outdoor spaces and the freedoms that we have. How do you feel about your outdoor space, Marianne? Because I know you haven't got a garden per se, but yeah. You've mentioned your roof terrace.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a little place down in Devon where we've got a garden. I haven't been to for months and months and months, and I absolutely miss it more than anything else. In fact, my kind of thinking about how I would like to live in the future, basically I'd like to live in a caravan on 3 acres of land that I could just garden. That would be my idea of heaven. However, I'm very, very lucky because I can use this beautiful roof garden outside and just that important outdoor space. I mean, when I'm feeling miserable, I throw the windows open, take lungfuls of fresh air. I go up onto the roof, just sort of stare out, just talk to the plants and all that kind of thing. It's so important. And we've also noticed how many, now we're coming out of lockdown, how many houses are for sale that haven't got gardens? You know, there's this huge influx of flats and houses that haven't got gardens because people are migrating out of the city to find a place where they've got an outdoor space. So it's so vitally important to us as human beings having a connection with an outdoor space. And I actually counter the fact that I haven't got a garden of my own here with filling my house with houseplants.
Yeah.
And that's another way of kind of thinking about the garden. But it really is, you know, it's our fifth room. It's an extension of our homes. It's so important to us. And what about you? I mean, you've described your garden at the moment. I mean, you're about to go, you know, full metal garden out in the countryside. But how do you use your garden? Or have you used it during lockdown?
So one of the reasons that I think it's taken us ages to find a place for us to live in selling the house that we live in now is because we've really prioritised finding a bigger, better outdoor space because it has become so vitally important. And I think we've all, before lockdown, really undervalued how important that outdoor space is. And so it's taken us a while to find the perfect spot, really, for that very reason. And for us, I've got young kids. They make a noise. They make a mess. They like being outside. They like shouting. They like paddling pools. You can't necessarily do all of that inside all the time. So it has been incredibly important to have that release of an outdoor space where they can just be and they can run around and they can run off that energy. So I think outdoor spaces are really, really important, not only so that, you know, for kids particularly, that energy can just go somewhere, but also just to appreciate, you know, the birds singing or, you know, the sun shining on your face. You know, it sounds really twee, doesn't it? But it's really important and it's sad when it's not there.
It is. And I think when people get a garden, it can be quite an overwhelming space, I think, sometimes, because you don't know where to start. What do you do if you've never been a gardener before and you've suddenly got this outdoor space? You haven't even got a lawnmower. Where do you start? So I thought we could talk about some of those really simple jobs that you can tick off, that you can do in a weekend, that can completely transform your space, give you a lovely canvas to start getting inspired and embracing everything great outdoors. So my top tip is I'm going to start with the garden fence, the humble garden fence, because there is nothing more simple to do than to give a garden fence either a lick of colour or a lick of preservative just to keep it going, to sort of refresh the natural colour of the wood. But what the garden fence can do is it can give you the most amazing backdrop to planting and foliage. Yes, and yeah. It can kind of like, you can make it enclose your garden, but you can also make it melt away and make a small garden seem bigger. So I would say my top tip for a weekend job is to paint the garden fence. And we'll talk about colours just in a little bit. What's your next top tip?
Going back to fences, it's not a job that necessarily we all look forward to, right? But there are things that can make that much easier for you. But I just wanted to really agree with you more than anything on the fences, because I've painted my own fence in my current back garden, and I've painted it in Cuprinol Duck's Back, and it's a fantastic product, and more than that, it's a fantastic colour, because it does exactly what you've just said, Marianne. It's a kind of dark grey with a hint of blue in it, and it just provides a really lovely backdrop or like canvas to the rest of the lovely grass or the hanging baskets that I've got in the garden. It just makes it sing.
Is that Urban Slate?
Urban Slate, yes, exactly. It's exactly that colour. So you knew exactly what colour it was. Aren't we good?
It's got this sort of modern feel to it, and it does make plants look amazing.
It really does. It definitely makes the kind of the green of the grass, when it is looking really lush and green, really pop out at you and makes everything look healthy and glowing, which, apart from myself, I tend not to stand next to that fence for that reason, because it doesn't have that same effect on me. But the grass, it makes look amazing. So that's good. But you could also paint your walls as well, right? It doesn't have to be your fences.
Yeah, if you've got a wall rather than a fence as a barrier to the garden, you can use, rather than using a Cuprinol product, which is for wood, you can use a Weathershield product, and then you could do the same thing. So you can either melt the walls away, make the garden seem bigger with brighter, paler colours, or you could paint it a really, really dark colour, like black, or a really deep grey, or even a really dark, dark, dark green to make that foliage really pop.
It would be lovely, yeah. I think people always kind of stray away from particularly painting their garden walls, but like, why not? It's part of your boundary. You know, consider it the walls as it would be in your interior. You know, it really does provide that kind of lovely wraparound colour. And there's you know, absolutely no reason that you couldn't, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility to paint your garden walls. There should be no problem with that. But do check with your local council, just in case that is a problem. I don't want to get you in trouble. But yeah, it's always an option to do that, and for it to really make an impact as well.
I've seen, there was some beautiful photography. We were working on this styling in a garden, where there was a wall I think it was the end of a garage, and it was painted and it had a beautiful shape on it. And yes. That idea of bringing a little bit of your kind of interior design inspiration out into the garden by using two colours on the wall. So it could be a split colour, or it could be actually, I think this was a circle, wasn't it, Steph? It was
really pretty. I know the one you mean.
So pretty.
Yeah, really pretty. Why not? Exactly. Because your garden or your yard or your patio or however you want to term it, it really is becoming more of an extension of your home, isn't it? We often refer to it as like the fifth room in your house. Not that you just have five rooms, but, you know, it is that additional room that you kind of have that you can consider a room, not just an outdoor garden bit. So why not start to bring some of those effects that we've talked about in previous episodes, like colour blocking or geometric shapes or stripes, or, you know, some of those more interior techniques. Bring them out into your garden. Why not? Because you're going to be spending a lot more time there, I'm sure of it, in the next few months.
What we've done as well, when we did the last garden shoot, we did split colours on fence panels. So you get the veneered edge fence panels, or the sort of horizontal slats. Take 2/3 of those in one colour, so a deep colour that really shows off the foliage, and then a paler colour up to the top. Oh my goodness. And that's so crazy easy to do.
That's such a clever idea.
It looks so premium. It is incredible. So there are also, in the show notes, we'll give you links to the how-tos on how to do those kind of things, because it will really transform your garden. It's the kind of thing you can do in a weekend, and your neighbours will be so jealous. They'll want to do it to their own on their side.
That's true. Pimped up fences. That's what I'm going to call that. Pimp up your fence this weekend with some of our kind of techniques. And yeah, they're so easy, aren't they? So easy.
Now, I want to know, Steph, are you going to have a she shed or a man cave in your new house?
Gosh, I hope so.
Have you got one ready?
Yeah. I don't have one here, but and there isn't one in the new house that we're buying. However, I am very much putting it on the list, I have to say, because you know, one needs their own space, don't they? And what better way to have that than actually kind of put a building of some kind in your garden? So yeah, she shed. I definitely think that's a great idea. Mm. I'm putting it on the list. Mm. It's in.
I also like these, there's big trends as well to have an outdoor kitchen or an outdoor yes. bar. So you see these on Pinterest and you see them on Instagram. You know, people make them out of pallets, a little bit of wood. You can get things cut to size. There's a fantastic how to make an outdoor bar, how to on the Cuprinol website at the moment. And it's really brilliant. But that outdoor bar idea, I mean, think it's about
brilliant.
It. Oh, such a lovely thing to do.
Oh, quick, loving it.
Quick gin and tonic before you do. No, don't do that, by the way. Don't ever have a gin and tonic before you get on a lawnmower.
No, let's not advise that. That's a health and no. safety nightmare right there.
That is absolutely not happening.
But do have a gin and tonic in the garden from your new outdoor gin bar. I think that's a fabulous idea. Yeah. I'm there. I feel absolutely. Like I'm there mentally already. So if I drift off in a minute and you don't get an answer from me, that's where I am mentally right now. But there are so many things that you can do with a garden, aren't there? You know, you've mentioned loads of ideas mm-hmm. there. Outdoor kitchens, you know, I think in the John Lewis Home Report that we talked about a few weeks ago on a previous podcast, sales of pizza ovens have gone through the roof because many more people are just utilizing the outdoor space as a space to cook, as a space to entertain, and, you know, a space to live, a space to work. You know, all of that can be done in the garden now. So there are loads of really good opportunities mm-hmm. to put, you know, the paint to good use and really jazz some things up in that garden space.
So another weekend project, Steph. So we've got fences.
Yeah.
We might make a little outdoor bar. That's a nice weekend project. Have we got any more outdoor projects we can do in a weekend?
So another great way to think about freshening up your garden in small quantities is also addressing what I'm going to call, very technically, your garden bits and bobs. So you've got things in your garden that are, you know, your wooden furniture that perhaps you've left out a little bit, or you're just about to refresh, getting it out of the shed for the season ahead. And but also like smaller items as well, like, you know, pots and planters. I know you're actually quite a big fan of painting your pots and planters, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I did a few pots on the balcony, on the roof garden. I painted them up because they were looking a bit tatty, to be honest. I was thinking I didn't want to throw them away because they weren't cracked. So I painted them up in Cuprinol garden shades. And the ones that I didn't paint, they've actually cracked this year. So I've got to have to get rid of them. But the ones that I painted, it's preserved them, but it made them look really pretty. And I used some really, really soft sort of coastal greys and greens. And oh my goodness, they look fantastic. So it's a fantastic way of adding just a little bit of colour to the garden, a little pop of something. But it also has a preservative quality for, you know, if you've got a grotty old terracotta pot, why don't throw it away, paint it up.
Yeah. Do you know what I love about that as well? I didn't realise, you know, pots and planters for your garden, because I don't have loads of borders in my garden currently. So I do a lot of container gardening. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to get a pretty decent sized, like glazed pot from even just a pretty reasonable garden centre or like a B&Q or a Homebase, it's actually quite expensive when you add it all up.
I mean, it is.
Yeah, it is. I was quite shocked. But actually, if you just get some fairly standard, but, you know, good quality, but fairly standard terracotta pots, they're actually relatively cheap. And then if you use something like Cuprinol Garden Shades, which you can use on terracotta, and you can paint, you know, freehand patterns, or you can do stripes, or, you know, loads of different things, then it actually opens, it just opens so many doors in terms of how what you can do with those pots and the colours that you can use, and it doesn't cost you a fortune.
No, I think it's lovely for kids as well, because if you're going to do a little, you know, the kids' garden, and they want to have their own little garden, if you don't have a garden but you've got a little patio, then painting up their own pots and putting their own herbs or their own vegetables in those pots, it just makes it so personal. I mean, you could have a whole family of pots, and each member of the family can have different colour and different patterns, and it's just a lovely fun way of jazzing something up that doesn't cost too much money.
I've got some in my garden that I jet wash every year. I've had for about 3 or 4 years now, and I paint them a different colour every season, because why not?
I do too.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's a great way to use up those kind of garden shades testers as well, which is always nice.
There was a lovely fairy garden as well that we did a couple of years ago, which was like taking a bowl planter and then filling it with some soil and finding little stones and moss and just little tiny, putting a bit of cress in there and a few fairies. And that was the cutest thing ever. It's a lovely thing to do with your kids. And I mean, just painted the outside of the bowl in a lovely colour. That was really lovely thing to do with children. I enjoyed it more than the kids, actually, to be honest.
That does sound quite cute. I can imagine the very whimsical way that you're thinking about it. And then I think how it would actually go in reality when I try and do this lovely, you know, fairy garden project with my kids. And, you know, they're eating the moss and they're getting paint on their eye. And, you know, it just, I'd love to think it's like what you're thinking. But then there's the reality. And I'm not sure I can get past that. I'm sure for someone else's kids that would be wonderful, you know, if you just had one, or if it was just you, maybe just do it on your own.
I think it was just me, Steph.
Well, there's loads of fab ideas there, loads and loads of ideas. So if we haven't inspired you with our top tips on things that you can do this weekend, paint your fences, paint your garden buildings, get yourself a gin bar, that's an unofficial 2A of the tips.
Call to action.
And spruce up your garden bits and bobs, then we can't help you. If you can't get any ideas from any of those things, then where have you been?
And there are some fantastic links on there, Steph. So if you look in the show notes, there are some lovely links to how-tos, weekend projects, and loads of things you can do in the garden yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're looking forward to seeing all of your gin bars and you sending them through to us in floods. And also for invites, we are happy for invites. So I'm feeling pretty inspired to get out and tidy up my garden now. It kind of puts my efforts to shame, doesn't it, really?
Me too. There's some lovely ideas there. Well, if you're looking for even more ideas on how to make the most of your garden, then our next guest could be just the ticket.
So, hi, Jane. Good morning. Really lovely to meet you. And thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on our podcast today. So I just wanted to give our listeners a bit of an intro to you. So would you mind if you gave us a bit of a biog of yourself and what you do?
Sure. Yes, I am. What am I? Well, I'm a journalist by training. So I started out in working in news journalism after university and did a very traditional route of working in local papers. And then I worked at The Guardian for 17 years. And the second half of that, though, was very different from the first. So the first half was news and breaking news specifically. So a very sort of high-paced environment. And then I had my daughter and the job of gardening editor came up. So I took that job, which was great when I came back from maternity leave. But I'd always been interested in plants and gardens as a sort of a hobby. So I knew quite a lot. And then I sort of took it on as my hobby and my job, which is amazing. So I was there working there as gardening editor for about 8 years, and then I went freelance, fully freelance, and I've started on The Ledge just before I left, actually, in February 2017, my podcast about houseplants. And I also write for lots of publications like the Financial Times and Gardens Illustrated about plants and gardens. So it's a wonderful thing to be able to combine your hobby and your job.
I really wanted to know, I've actually just bought a new house and it's got quite a large garden, and I have dabbled in gardening up until now. I've had quite a small garden with not huge amounts of containers, but I've now kind of got quite a big garden and I'm finding it quite overwhelming and intimidating, just the thought of actually knowing what to do. So where do you kind of start on planning a garden? Do you have any tips on a way to go about it that makes it feel less overwhelming?
It can feel really overwhelming, can't it? Especially if you're new. Assuming that you haven't got a completely new build, assuming that it's a house that's where the garden's been tended in some way in the past, I would always recommend, and this is comforting for anyone who's kind of got into that thing of, I've got to do something now, literally just sitting there for a year and not doing anything.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I could do that.
When I say not doing anything, you are doing something. You're observing what's already there and you're observing your garden. So it's things like, you may not realize, you may think your garden's very empty, but there might be tons of spring bulbs coming up right now. Or there might be a wonderful flowering shrub, which looks very boring the rest of the year, but has wonderful flowers on it in the middle of summer. or there might be a wonderful evergreen that suddenly comes into its own in winter and offers structure to the garden. So by waiting to see what those things are season by season, you get an idea of what's already there. You also get a chance to do things like, where is the sunny spot in this garden? Where is that shady dry corner? What happens with that neighbor's tree in winter? Do the leaves fall off and fall into my garden? Does that leave more light? You get to see the garden in all seasons. And that really gives you a chance to assess what you want to do with it. And that's very hard to sit back and not do anything, but you are doing something, as I say. If you want to start doing things, what I would say is start at your back door or the doors that go from your house into your garden. Start there, because that's the place where it's easiest to monitor and maintain what's going on. So start with something very small. It could just be one single pot on your porch or outside your back door, and it might have something useful in it, like some herbs or something that brings you joy, some spring flowers or some summer bedding, and work out from there.
I think that makes a lot of sense. So I think I have to exercise some patience, really, is what you're saying. So I'll have to rein in the excitement, live through it, I think, for a few seasons. I think that's a great piece of advice. And there's quite a lot of trends at the moment for kind of building in your garden, whether that's kind of barbecue areas or outdoor kitchens are a big thing at the moment, you know, outdoor buildings. I guess you have to sort of understand how to put those sorts of things into your garden as well as the planting as well.
Yes, I mean, I think with any kind of big project that you're looking at, you need to think about how you're going to use that structure.
Yeah.
And outdoor kitchens are really, really popular. Like, you know, here in the UK, it's a lovely idea. And some years you may get loads of use out of it, but you need to think really hard. It's a really big investment to make an outdoor kitchen. So you need to be really convinced that you're going to make really good use out of that. With other structures, what I'd say is make sure that they are, and this sounds really silly, but, you know, human beings by nature, we're a little bit lazy. Don't make it at the far end of a really long garden where you're never going to make it down to that gazebo. You know, make sure that you really think through how you're going to use that structure and what you're going to use it for. And the other thing is, I would also say go for durability rather than price, because you do get what you pay for. And if you use softwoods and materials that are going to deteriorate really quickly, oftentimes you'll find that your investment hasn't really paid off. So think about durability and maintenance of that thing as well.
I'm really interested in understanding from your point of view, do you have any like favourite garden plants or plant colour combinations that you just keep going back to, you know, every time that you're, you know, doing a space in your garden? Do you have any sort of favourites?
Well, it's really interesting. I think years ago when I first had my first garden, I think I was very much into this idea of, oh, everything's got to be so tasteful and stylish. Some of the things I often used to hear from readers when I was at The Guardian was, oh, I want to make a white garden, like the white garden at Sissinghurst.
Or I
love black flowers or really dark. And I always used to sort of, I finally realised after, you know, many conversations with garden designers and, you know, research, that actually those kind of gardens are really, really hard to do well. And it's a lot easier to bring in colour. Colour is really, really important in a garden. And so I finally got over myself and stopped trying to be all tasteful. And particularly the colour pink, I was really scared of the colour pink for some reason. Yeah. And I just finally got over myself. And I now have actually blooming not far from where I'm sitting, a bright, really bright pink camellia, which is insanely pink.
I love
but it's
them.
Really lovely. And I do use pink a lot in the garden now. And I've got over that sort of fear of it. So in my garden right now, I've got a tulip called Lovely and Dreamy. And I really hate that name, but it's a really nice tulip. It's pink with a sort of a purplish lilac tinge. And I've got lots of that. And that's set against euphorbia flowers.
Yeah.
And also I've got some box, which is sort of mid-green foliage. And I've also got the little green foliage and about to be blue flowers of forget-me-nots coming up. So a really classic combination. But I do have an area at the back of the garden next to my veg beds, which I call the the Gaudy Corner, which is basically whenever I get, occasionally for my birthday, which is in February, I get sent lovely indoor displays of bulbs, spring bulbs. And it's things like hyacinths and lovely little narcissi and tulips and things like that, but that don't fit with the colour scheme elsewhere in the garden. So they, when they've finished it blooming inside, they get put into the Gaudy Corner. And it is, and actually, you know what? It's the best part of the garden in spring, because it's just a riot of colour. The hyacinths smell amazing.
They do.
And you just, I mean, I also can use that as a cutting patch as well. So I cut lots of tulips from there to bring into the house as well. And it's just really nice. But I think what I would say is just try to be simple about your colour combinations. I mean, obviously the Gaudy Corner is great, but if you can just think about a couple of colours that you really like and what the sort of foliage backdrop's going to be, and just repeat, repeat, repeat. That's the other thing that I've learned from garden designers over the years, is simplify your colour palette and your plant palette and just repeat through the garden.
So you talked about houseplants being actually kind of quite trendy right now, which I hate that word, but you know, there is a reason for using that because it's true. So houseplants are very on trend. So what are the kind of go-to houseplants at the moment that you're kind of seeing everywhere, or are there any kind of up and comers that you think are going to come through?
Yeah, there are so many things that are wildly popular right now. Cacti and succulents, I think, have always been popular. Unfortunately, widely misunderstood. If you have a cactus or a succulent sitting on in a dark room that hasn't grown or is a shriveled mess, then probably you need to listen to my podcast. But lots of people buy these beautiful architectural forms of cacti and succulents because of that, because they perceive them to be easy. And indeed, they are easy. But yeah, so cacti and succulents are still huge and will continue to be huge. I think they are just such great plants. They are really tough. They've got these wonderful architectural forms, unusual forms that are just great. In terms of other things that are big right now, I think the Maranta group has gone crazy in the last few years. So what does that mean? It just means a group of plants in various species, and it includes things like Calatheas, which have been renamed Gepertia, but nobody's using that name because it's awful. Calatheas, Stromanths, Tenanthes, and Marantas. So these are foliage plants with dramatic variegation, which you'll see in every big box store you go into. There'll be loads of them in there.
Yeah, I've got one.
And they're
bought from a big box store.
Yeah, they're not the easiest things, is the only trouble that people are finding. Yeah. So people buy lots of these plants and they are very beautiful, but they're very prone to spider mite, which is a pest of houseplants. They also are quite sensitive to dry air, and so lots of things can go wrong. They're not the easiest, but they are very beautiful and people love that variegation. Another thing that is really big right now are members of the aroid family. So that means everything from your common or garden peace lily, which we're probably all familiar with.
Yes,
with the white flowers and the green foliage, to things like the Swiss cheese plant with its holy leaves, which is obviously a real classic. But there are lots of more unusual aroids that are coming onto the market and becoming more widely available, such as the Anthuriums. And there's flowering forms of that genus. And there's also foliage plants which are grown, which have these amazing veined leaves. So there's loads of really cool houseplants out there. My favorites, though, and in fact I'm actually on trend, I would say, there's a genus of plants called Hoya, Hoya, and I think these are just the best. They are wonderful plants. They are usually trailing or climbing plants. Okay. And most of them have thick, fleshy leaves and also beautiful flowers. And they are plants that have been around forever. They've been, your nan might have a Hoya in her house. Oh,
I'll have to ask.
Because they're very long-lived and very easy. But now a whole load of new species has come onto the market. And there are lots of different tweaks and things in terms of which species you're growing. But on the whole, the most popular species are really easy. And you've got foliage, you've got flowers, and they're easy to care for. So that they have the whole package as far as I'm concerned. So Hoya is something to look out for. And if you're looking out for the easiest and most widely available one, is called Hoya carnosa. And it's usually labeled the wax plant. So that's the one to look out for. And you get some cool variegated forms of that available as well. So yeah, check out the Hoyas.
Nice. I will. I'm going to have to go away and do some plant research after that. There's some plenty of names I can't pronounce in there. So I will go away and have a little look. So I feel like I've made a page full of notes of things that I need to take and actually implement with my houseplants in mind. So actually, can you round up some of the crucial details of where people can find On the Ledge? And also, I know you wanted to do a shout out for a book that you're trying to crowdfund at the moment. So give us all the details.
Yeah, so On the Ledge is available on all the pod apps you might expect it to be available from, Spotify and Apple Podcasts and so on. If you want to go and check out my website, it's just janeperrone.com. And you can listen to the episodes through that site. And you can also access my show notes. And I do try to write quite extensive show notes to go with each episode.
They're great, actually. Really useful.
So that's really worth looking at. And you can also search there for different topics that you want to look at. And there's also I always send people to my thematic guide of episodes. So if you're really interested in one particular thing, or if you're a beginner, you can find the episodes that you want to start listening to. The book is going to be called Legends of the Leaf. And I'm crowdfunding that now. I'm at 76%, which is very exciting. So the book is going to be profiles of 25 iconic houseplants. And I'm hoping that it's not going to be like any other book, in that it's really going to go into the stories behind those plants. So where do they come from? How do they grow in the wild? What are they used for by the people who live where they grow? How did they end up in our houses? And I've already started uncovering some really interesting stories. So it's going to include classics like the Swiss cheese plant, Monstera deliciosa.
Yes. Yeah,
and, plants that you'll really recognise, the polka dot begonia, which is so popular now. So those will be, each one of those will be profiled. And there'll also be a care guide, which will be hopefully very informative, because it will draw on lots of expertise that will give you the tips that you need to keep those plants healthy. And the information for that is just on my website at janeperrone.com. So you can just click through and have a look at that. And the pledges for the book are still ongoing. And hopefully once it's funded, it will happen. But it's a crowdfunding model, so I have to get the support first before the book goes ahead.
Brilliant. Well, I am definitely going to be looking at that and making a donation, because I think that sounds like a fabulous encyclopedia of everything that I will probably need to know about those houseplants that we've just talked about. So thank you so much for going into that. I've got one final question for you, which I always like to ask all of our guests that come on. Do you have a favourite colour? And I suspect I know perhaps what your favourite colour might be, bearing in mind your job, but I could be wrong. And why is that colour your favourite colour?
Well, my husband would tell you that my favourite colour is grey, because he says that everything I want to have in the house is grey. I would dispute that. I would say that my favourite colour is probably... This is a very hard question.
It's a hard one.
I do love blue. I do love green. I mean, I'm sitting in a room that's painted pale green right now. And I like to think that we were ahead of the dark navy blue trend, in that our kitchen wall is painted dark navy blue. And we do have quite a lot of pale powder blue rooms in our house. So those are really my two favourite colours. And I guess you could say, well, that's plants in the sky, which reflects the fact that I do love the outdoors. And I think they just are, we're hardwired to appreciate those two colors, because it's the color of plants and the sky, which
exactly.
Maybe that I haven't got any scientific evidence for that, but that's my theory anyway.
Well, thank you so much, Jane. It's been, as I say, a pleasure talking to you, and I've learned so much from our conversation.
Yes, that's great. Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
That was brilliant. I love Jane because she loves plants just as much as I do. I am going to check out her On the Ledge podcast. You must do that too. Amazing.
Absolutely amazing. I absolutely love talking to her. As we know, I tend to kill all of my houseplants. So I'm definitely going to be calling Jane back in order to get some more tips and tricks from her because she clearly knows her stuff. So, well, Marianne, it is time to pop on your paint-spattered white jacket and lend your ear to the nation as we move on to one of our favourite parts of the podcast. It's the bit where we ask our very own Marianne, Doctor of Decorating, to prescribe the antidote for your DIY problems. So, Marianne, are you ready for today's decorating dilemmas?
I absolutely am, Steph. Bring them on.
Okay, so our first question is from a listener who got in touch with us on Instagram and has a question for you about painting a garage wall. Hi, Dr. Dulux. I wanted some advice on painting my garage. I've got a garage that's partly in my garden set back from the house. I'd like to freshen up the whole space, so I thought it might be good to paint the garage wall that faces into my patio. What do you think? Do you have any advice on products and colours that I could use?
So, a garage wall. I'm going to start with product because you need a really good product that will stand the weather that's going to be chucked at it, and you don't want to be painting every year. So, I would go for a Dulux weather shield that offers all weather protection and a 15-year guarantee. And you can choose a masonry that's smooth or textured depending on the look and feel that you want. And I would suggest that you want to probably brighten up that space but not be too blinding. So painting it a white might be just too much. You need your sunglasses on. And I would probably suggest some lovely off-white like jasmine white if you wanted a warm, cozy sort of glow. Yeah. Or a little bit more urban, maybe soft grey like ashen white or pale slate. And that would give you a sort of softer look to that space. So a little bit more dreamy, a little bit more misty. If you wanted something that blended back into your foliage, very, very beautiful colour called green ivy in masonry paint. I would suggest you have a look at that so you can get some testers for those. But painting that will be very, very easy. Make sure it's nice and clean. Get rid of all of the muck. Give it a good old brush. Make sure it's nice and dry. And then get a big masonry brush or a masonry roller. Tickle in all of the edges with a little brush and then fill in the big spaces with a roller. And you probably need two coats. And what you'll probably find is when you've painted it, you'll find lots of little gaps because basically you'll have to go in there with a little brush and just get into all the little gaps and holes because you won't notice them until you've painted it. But it doesn't take too long. It's all water-based and it's a fantastic weekend job.
Absolutely. That's great advice there. Yeah, so definitely do have a look at the WeatherShield range of products because those are going to be the products that you're going to want to use. So thank you for that, Marianne. There's some really great suggestions there. I would also advise looking on the duluxweathershield.co.uk site for more inspiration. And also we've got a new colour and product magazine on there too. You can read it on the site and then there's also it's available in store. So definitely go and have a look at that to kind of get your creative juices flowing and start to understand everything that you need to do there. Great. Well, thank you for that question. Are you ready for another, Marianne?
I am. Fire away, Steph.
So again, this is another great question from one of our Dulux UK Instagram followers, and their question is about painting a garden fence. Hi, Marianne and Steph. I wanted to get my garden summer ready and I'm thinking about painting the fence. I don't want to just paint it brown. I was thinking about painting it in something a bit more interesting than the normal fence colours. Do you have any colours that you might suggest?
Oh, I love a painted fence. There's something lovely about painted fence. And we've got Cuprinol Garden Shades. And Cuprinol Garden Shades are colours that have been designed to work outside. And we put this colour palette together. There are two sides to this palette. One we call Nature's Neutrals, and then another palette of colours called Nature's Bright. And Nature's Neutrals are all of those colours that we actually find in the garden. Greens of foliage, blue of the sky and water, and then stone and terracotta. All of these colours that we are naturally associate with the outside, we call them Nature's Neutrals, and they work together effortlessly. So you can choose any of those colours to paint your fence and it will effortlessly melt into the foliage and the sky. It'll make the garden look huge and really classic. And then we have these colours called Nature's Brights. And these are like flowers in a garden. So these are the colours that you don't use so much of, but they make a big impact. And these kind of colours are the things that where you can pick out little details. Now, I would suggest for your fences, if you wanted to have something really modern and a real kind of like standout colour, I would go for one of those gorgeous deep blues that are really cool interiors and kind of connect that indoor-outdoor space. And so a colour cut like iris, it's beautiful, beautiful colour, beautiful deep dark blue. There's another one called Beaumont Blue, which is absolutely beautiful. This is a kind of more of a tealy, sort of smoky tealy blue. And those two colours are colours that we're using in our homes a lot at the moment and will connect the indoors and outdoors, but it will also connect the garden with the sky, the beautiful blue sky. Another colour I would suggest, if you want colour but you're a little bit, maybe a little bit reticent to use something so strong, I would go for something really, really soft like Old English Green or Willow or a combination of the two colours together. So Old English Green will just melt those fences away. And then maybe if you had a fence where you could paint a bottom two thirds in one colour and then the top third in another, I would suggest a colour like Old English Green on the bottom two thirds and then the top or even just the top rail in a colour called Willow. And those two colours work beautifully together. So you can just combine two different tones of a similar kind of colour together on the fence. That would look amazing. And then if you've got a small garden, because you don't mention how big this garden is, if you wanted to make that small garden seem really, I mean, I'm going to go cottage core here,
Steph. Yeah, I need that.
If you want that garden to look really big but really classic, I would go for a pale colour and I would think about something like pale jasmine, white daisy, natural stone. Oh my goodness, that's a gorgeous colour for a fence, natural stone. And these are pale colours that will throw the foliage out in a slightly different way, but it will just make a small space seem really big. But I would get a little tester, try it out, see how you feel, because you can get testers in Cupronol, and then go from there.
Really, really good idea actually to use some of those neutral tones but that aren't brown, you know, so some of those kind of softer, like taupey stone colours. That sounds really interesting, actually. You don't see that a lot in or on fences, do you? You often kind of go with the darker.
It's beautiful.
So I bet that looks really, really beautiful, actually. Really kind of classic and sophisticated. I am a fan of dark, as we all know. So one of the things that you, of course, can do then is go kind of quite dark and dramatic. So Marianne mentioned about some of those dark and dramatic interior trends that we're seeing, the navies and the teals and the deep greens. They would look amazing on fences. But you can also, you know, kind of go that one step further, potentially use a really sophisticated kind of deep grey or even a black. You know, how good would black fencing look? It would really make your planting kind of really jump out at you. And it depends kind of what your style is. I quite like having really bright pops of, say, like orange or purple or yellow kind of planting. Not that I have huge amounts of it in my garden, but if I did, you know, those zingier colours, I think I'd be really drawn to. So having something like a black or a dark grey would just make those colours even more vibrant. So potentially have a think about, you know, going really dark even if your planting will stand up to that. And of course, you can get a lot of these colours in garden shades, as we talked about. And there's also a product called Cupronol Duck's Back, which does give you that extra level of protection. And of course, we all have to think about this at this time of year. We get terribly excited when it is the time of year where we can get in our gardens. But of course, in the next moment, it can rain. So the good thing about Cupronol Duck's Back is that it is showerproof in an hour. So if you do have one of those spells where you think, ah, fantastic, I'll put the bikini on and start doing some fence painting, because, you know, we all do that. And then 20 minutes later, you think, oh, hang on, it doesn't look as sunny.
Get your raincoat on.
That's no problem. You can actually do that with Duck's Back, which is great. It does have those showerproof properties, which is fab. So hopefully that has given lots of ideas about how to bring a bit of colour to your garden fences without going for the staid brown options that we want to avoid every now and then. So lots of different ideas there. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Dulux. But that does mean, sadly, we are almost finished with this episode and with the series. which just seems to have gone so quickly.
I know. I can't believe it's so sad.
Yeah, we do have to stop chatting on air now, unfortunately. Enough of that, though, before we all start getting a bit emotional. Are you ready for a bit of feel-good colour? Here is our wonderful guest leaving us with their personal feel-good colour moment.
When I moved into my first house that was truly mine, that I was renting and living in on my own, I remember really wanting to rebel against all the magnolia walls of of my life, all those rented rooms that I'd lived in that were painted like really boring colours, and indeed probably my parents' house, which was, you know, classic sort of 80s subdued colours. And so I wanted to paint something really bright. So I painted my bedroom sunshine yellow, the brightest possible shade of yellow that you can imagine. And I remember just getting so much joy out of that room because it was so different from all the other rooms I'd sort of grown up in and lived in when I was moving around from place to place. And when I was finally settled, I wanted that bright yellow room, and I got it by just splashing a load of sunshine yellow all over the walls. And it brought me great joy. I haven't had a bright yellow room since then, but I think I've probably grown up a bit now and it's a bit too bright. But at the time, it was so fun, and it was really symbolic of me sort of breaking away from the colours that had been sort of imposed on me in the past.
Amazing. That's brilliant. Thank you so much. What a great note to end the series on. And with that, it's time for us to say goodbye for yet another series. But don't worry, we will be back before you know it. Please do hit that subscribe button on your preferred podcast platform so that you can be notified of when we are back in action. And of course, we would really love to hear what you think.
We really would. So please leave us a rating and a review so we can make our content bigger and better next time. It's been truly wonderful having you along for the ride, and thanks for listening. And do join us again for more
Let's Cover!